I think it's only fair to start this with some breaking news. We have some breaking news that Iran has reclosed the Strait of Hormuz once again because, surprise, surprise, Israel just struck Lebanon, and that broke any sort of memorandum, any sort of understanding that the United States had with other countries in the Middle East. Time and time again, the supposed ally of Israel is completely ruining any sort of chance at progress in the Middle East. Now, I want to be very, very clear. Donald Trump has agency in this situation. J.D. Vance has also screwed up in this situation. This administration is being dog-walked by a country that they have given tens of billions of dollars to in weapon sales, and then, of course, the $3.8 billion that goes towards Israel every single year. Now, this administration has done it in such an unconditional manner that Israel is able to continue violating any sort of deal in the Middle East and taking us back to square one. Israel is desperately trying to decouple their war with Lebanon and the United States war with Iran. If Israel is able to effectively decouple this, and they can strike Lebanon as much as they want, they can strike civilian populations in Beirut, but Iran is not letting that happen. Iran said in the memorandum of understanding that this is all reliant on Israel continuing to withhold and not strike Lebanon. So all of this is just falling apart. And I think it's very important to point out what Ben Gavir tweeted out yesterday on Twitter. This was a wild, wild post from Ben Gavir. Ben Gavir is, of course, an Israeli politician. He's the Israeli Minister of National Security. He tweeted out on Twitter, and it was so bad that it now says, "This post violated the X terms of service. However, X has kept it accessible for the public's interest." So it was so violent that even X had to be like, what the hell? He said, Ben Gavir, "For every tear of an Israeli mother, 1,000 Lebanese mothers must weep. All of Lebanon must burn. With all due respect to the Americans, Israel must make it clear to the entire world that the blood of our sons and the security of our citizens are not forfeit. All of Lebanon must burn. I told the prime minister, even in our private meetings, for every tear of an Israeli mother, 1,000 Lebanese mothers must weep." This is psychopathic, insane. Yeah. BS. This is like a villain in a movie doing this. So, you know, I'll wrap it up and give it to you in 1 second, but we are in a situation where the United States has gone into war with Iran because Netanyahu pitched Donald Trump on it and they decided to go on this joint venture. Here we are 110 days into this war, sorry, and Israel is continuing to string us along. Now, J.D. Vance is going out there on stage. Even Trump is going out there on stage and kind of weakly trying to call out Israel, but it's not enough. Unless we have a total stop of aid to Israel, unless we stop the flow of aid to Israel, then we're not going to have any sort of leverage over them. The ultimate leverage is walking away. And in my opinion, we should never be giving unconditional aid to any country. Over at Makler Media, Micah and I talk about two separate conditions that there should be. Number one, we can give aid to a country if they're the good guy in the situation. And number two, we can give aid to a country if our aid meaningfully changes the outcome of the war. So with the war in Ukraine, are they the good guys? Yeah, I would say Ukraine's the good guys for sure. Will us giving Ukraine aid meaningfully help them? Yeah, I would say it would, absolutely. When you go over to Israel, I don't think they're the good guys anymore. They're definitely not, especially when it pertains to the West Bank settlements and their treatment of the Gazans. But number two, will our aid even help them in any meaningful way? No, they already have the type of equipment and money that they need. So J.D. Vance is out there trying to act like he's separating himself, distancing himself from Israel. And this has caused a fracture in the Republican movement. We have everybody from, you know, Mark Levin now beefing with J.D. Vance. Republican Representative Randy Fine tweeted out, "Anybody but Vance 2028. So a lot of the Jewish coalition of the Republican Party are pissed at Vance. The far right coalition, which is like the Nick Fuentes anti-Semitic people, already hate J.D. Vance. So he's basically lost everybody in the Republican Party that could possibly support him. And Israel is continuing to dog walk us on a daily basis as Bibi gets less and less popular and as Trump gets less and less popular. So, Mike, I want you to take it away. And of course, if you're watching on YouTube after the fact, it would mean the world if you hit the like button. It helps boost us in this algorithm against all of these right-wing chaos agents. And then subscribe to both Mike Nellis and I down below.
Yeah, please do. Please do. So I'm going to break this up into two things that I'm thinking about relative to this. The first thing is I want to underline something that you just said, which is that, you know, Bibi Netanyahu pitched Trump on this war. I want to be super clear about that. He didn't just pitch Trump on this war. He manipulated the U.S. government and our campaign finance laws. Like, that's what happened here. Okay, you have Lindsey Graham flying to Tel Aviv to get talking points to sell Donald Trump on how easy taking down Iran is going to be. You have Trump's biggest donors in Miriam Adelson and Paul Singer, who, by the way, are all over the Epstein class and are the ones who got Thomas Massie kicked out of Congress a few weeks ago, manipulating Donald Trump and promising to pull their financial support if he doesn't do whatever the hell they want in Israel. You have AIPAC spending unbelievable sums of money to try to choose who our elected officials are, running ads through shell organizations right now, which, by the way, is also what the AI companies do in crypto and big oil and gas and all kinds of other lobbies. But they're doing it and they're running these fake ads, basically attacking our candidates in Democratic primaries and Republican primaries. And then later going, look how popular Israel is, when they ran ads on The Economy or some Oppo research or something like that. There's a full scale manipulation of our politics by foreign governments. It is also happening by Russia. It is also happening by China. It is also happening by other Middle East countries. It is a massive problem, to the point where you and I talk about building these independent media companies. Usually we're talking about not taking money from a big billionaire, but I think we're also talking about not taking money from Russia or Israel or China or anybody else, because you simply do not know who you trust in this ecosystem, who's actually being paid to tell you the things that they're telling you. And there's so much propaganda that's flying right now. So that's number one. And then you mentioned, and I'm sorry, guys, I'm getting over a cold a little bit. Plus, I was out at a bachelor party last night, so I'm a little bit salty. I'm a little bit off. But, you know, Netanyahu's popularity is declining, but it's declining for the exact opposite reason that Donald Trump says. And I think people have to understand this, that the political pressure in America right now is end this war. We're mad about gas prices. We don't like spending all this money. We don't like the 13 American servicemen and women are dead. We think this is ridiculous. In Israel, it's the exact opposite. Netanyahu's approval rating is collapsing because he's not killing more people in Lebanon, not killing more people in Iran. And the people of Israel are spiraling out of control on this. And that's why all the people, and like, look, I think Bibi Netanyahu is a war criminal. Okay. Like, let me be super clear about that. But if he leaves, the next guy is likely to be worse. And so I think we're at an inflection moment in this relationship here. And like, look, I have a ton of love for the people of Israel. I have a ton of love for the people of Palestine, especially those living in the Gaza Strip. I have a ton of love for the people living in Lebanon and the people in Iran. Okay. They're all good, fundamentally decent people trapped in governments that have zero interest in keeping them safe, helping them advance to the point where they can live lives of, you know, dignity and opportunity. And I want them all to be safe, but their governments are absolutely failing them. But if Israel lurches further to the right here, and it's already in a situation where the far right coalitions in Israel are actively hostile, not just to Muslims and Palestinians, they're also actively hostile to Christians, okay? It is now dangerous in some parts of Israel to be a Christian right now. They're attacking Christians in Lebanon too. I don't see any of these religious Christian fundamentalists in America talking about that, because they've got Israel's talking points to shove so far up their ass. And it's ridiculous. So the United States government has to make a choice here. We could either continue to support Israel in some way to keep the people safe. And maybe there's an argument to be made for, you know, helping fund the Iron Dome and stuff like that. I can see that argument, although I'm sort of at a cut it off point right now because I'm sick of this shit. But it cannot be unconditional anymore.
Yeah.
If we're going to spend as much money as we spend in Israel at a time when I'm told that the United States government is broke and can't do anything to stop people's healthcare premiums from doubling or tripling, we can't do anything about student loan debt, we can't do anything to build more housing, which is what the Republican Party says, then we should be broke for this shit too. But if we're going to do it, it comes with conditions. Okay, this is what you can use it for. They're the only country that we consistently give money to that we don't put conditions on how they can use the weapons. That simply isn't right. Even Ukraine, we put conditions on Ukraine and they are in the middle of a war of aggression via Russia. Okay, it's mind-boggling to me. And we can't keep operating this way. Like, I'll put a capper on it here is Trump ran on this supposed America First agenda, right? Which you and I know is a dog whistle attacking immigrants. That's really what it is. But it attracted a lot of people because they were like, you know what? This country's falling apart. And it seems like we're spending more money overseas. Why people don't like foreign aids, why they didn't like USAID, right? But Trump has found himself in that. And by the way, I think the dismantling of USAID was wrong, to be clear. But Trump finds himself in a situation where he's spending all of his time supporting foreign entities and doing nothing here. Everything's falling apart right now. So like, maybe people would put up with this stuff if like they could find a good paying job and they weren't worried about AI crushing their career and they were able to buy a house to take care of their family, but they can't. And meanwhile, a lot of people are getting killed. And Israel, it seems like, it feels like it's the one leading our government right now. Like, Trump has negotiated a really shitty deal in Iran. We haven't talked about how shitty the deal he negotiated was. He's so desperate to end it. And Israel has blown that deal up by continuing to attack Lebanon because our president is so weak, he has no influence over Bibi Netanyahu. How is that possible? America is supposed to be the most powerful nation on the planet. We should be able to influence one of our closest allies to not kill people in Lebanon in order to create peace in the Middle East. We can't do that. And it's because the president is weak and stupid and vain and spending more time focused on conspiracy theories about liberal activists like you and I ruining the reflecting pool because it's all green now. So it's just, it's all so stupid. I'll hand it back to you, buddy.
Was this bachelor party just you pouring a bunch of hydrogen peroxide into the pool to ruin it?
That's no, but did you see the allegedly? So Keith Edwards tweeted, "If I'll pay somebody like $86.47 if somebody sends me a piece of the pool." And then the Secret Service, he's saying the Secret Service showed up to like ask him questions about it.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And I don't, Keith would make something like that up, but I do think it would also happen.
Yeah. The Secret Service would definitely do that. But on a serious note,
if you're out there and you want to mail me a piece of the reflecting pool, I'll take one as a souvenir.
And become a paid subscriber if you want us to release a video of Mike Nellis dancing on a table at the bachelor party.
If somebody mails it to me, I'll do a full unpacking video on my YouTube where I'll take that time.
We have videos that are released of Mike Nellis dancing at the bachelor party on a table last night. We are going to release those. No, we don't have anything like that.
But you should be careful about accusations like that because I do have a video of you dancing at one of the influencer parties. That's what I was referring to.
Yeah, yeah. But really quickly, there is just to loop back to this breaking news that we started off with because it builds on everything that you were just saying. There are clips of J.D. Vance on Fox News this morning. 1 hour ago on Fox News, and Fox and Friends quoted him. They quote him saying, "The Strait really is open. The Strait is finally open." And then it says, "J.D. Vance breaks down the importance of the Strait of Hormuz being open on Fox and Friends." Within an hour, they officially closed it down. There's another clip of J.D. Vance on Fox and Friends this morning saying that Israel is going to change course and is not going to ruin this ceasefire. He's saying it in different words. He basically says talks are progressing, Iran and Israel, and everyone's going to abide by this. Guess what? Within the hour, J.D. Vance was absolutely proven wrong by our supposed allies of Israel as they continue to escalate this war in Lebanon. So I agree. It's really despicable. And a lot of young people right now feel apathetic towards a government that continues to shovel money towards allies unconditionally and then turns around and says that we don't have enough money to fund things at home that are just basic necessities. The Republican Party will say that free childcare or that free college or that even like what Zohran Mamdani did, which was free childcare for two-year-olds. It was like a very surgical thing that they did because that's what they were able to allocate money towards a few specific sectors. And it makes sense. It's pragmatic. He said, we only have this much money to allocate right now. We're going to do it in this way. The Republican Party called that socialism and said, no. What we're going to do is reallocate all of this money towards a war with Iran, towards funding Israel, and then towards Israel elongating the very war with Iran that is costing us a bunch of money. You also mentioned the deal that the United States struck up with Iran. It's more of a memorandum of understanding, but yeah, it's like a memorandum, as I said last show, of understanding that neither side understands that might eventually lead to a 60-day ceasefire. And that 60-day ceasefire is hopefully going to lead to the beginning of negotiations on the nuclear question. But a part of it was $300 billion in a reconstruction fund for Iran. This is not $300 billion coming from the United States, but it's almost even worse. It all rests on this fantasy that the United States is going to be able to pressure the Gulf countries that we just dragged into this war, that Iran was just firing at, into giving $300 billion collectively to Iran. Now, just think about it. We start a war with Iran, and Iran decides to retaliate by striking U.S. bases in Gulf countries surrounding them. Now, as a part of the deal, Trump is saying, okay, those Gulf countries are going to get a bunch of money together and reinvest it into the very same country of Iran that was firing at all those countries. It is absolutely despicable. It's nowhere near the JCPOA. And the thing is, Republicans know this. Everybody across the spectrum knows this. Nick Fuentes, who I'm not citing him or praising him in that way, I just mean he made a video railing against all of this. Right after that, Lindsey Graham came out saying he was skeptical of all of this. I've been watching Ben Shapiro's clips on Twitter where he comes out. He is firmly against this. Ben Shapiro keeps saying that this deal is awful. J.D. Vance is being thrown under the bus very clearly because they keep calling him the architect of this deal. Now, if the deal were good, if the deal were helping us, then Trump would be claiming credit and talking about him being the architect, but he's not. It's J.D. Vance that they're blaming it on right now. And then one more thing, they literally signed the memorandum in Versailles, as somebody in chat points out. They literally signed the treaty in Versailles. At the same time, Donald Trump is pissing off world leaders and Israel is effing up the United States.
I mean, signing in Versailles is some real Veep level shit, in my opinion. If the Veep writers wrote the last year and a half, you wouldn't believe it. You'd be like, they've jumped the shark. It's just so crazy. The $300 billion is the thing that just absolutely pisses me off, because they were so mad. Like, when Trump tore up the Obama's Iran deal, the JCPOA, it was because we gave $1.5 billion. We unfroze $1.5 billion to Iran. Now we're going to give them $300 billion. And it was because they didn't think the protections to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon were strong enough. They're word for word the same thing in this memorandum of understanding. Like, it is maybe like two words are different. It's just so crazy to me. And he thinks he's so smart. But, you know, J.D. Vance, and let's talk about Vance for a second, because he's been on he's done every show under the sun, it feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah. Each one's going worse than the last.
I mean, so bad. I mean, he did the Diary of a CEO guy, and, like, that was so uncomfortable. There's so many moments from that. Shout out, I don't know that guy's name. I forget his name, but, like, kudos to him for, like, asking some actual tough questions. He didn't have to do that. But, like, he was asked at, I think, the White House press briefing, how they know Iran is not going to because they claim that they've destroyed Iran's nuclear capabilities, which is bullshit. But let's assume for the sake of the argument, it's true. They say, how do you know they're not going to rebuild it? And J.D. Vance goes, well, they're not going to have the money to be able to rebuild their nuclear arsenal, whichever reporter will say, Caitlin Collins. And my immediate reaction to that was, well, they have $300 billion you're giving them. You're giving them $300 billion. I'm pretty sure they could jumpstart a nuclear program with that. Because do you really think the tyrannical, evil, oppressive regime of Iran, which they've been screaming at you and I on cable news about, which, by the way, they're right about that. They're a terrible government that is horrible to their people.
Do you really think they're
going to spend that on feeding people? They're not going to spend that on feeding people. They're going to buy missiles. They're going to rebuild their navy. They're going to rebuild their army. They're going to rebuild their nuclear arsenal. And they're going to try to make themselves a stronger regional player now with a victory over America in a war. Okay? They look stronger than ever. Plus, they have full sovereignty over the Strait of Hormuz with the ability to charge tolls. Okay, so they're going to be making more money on that. So this is, like, it's the worst of everything, right? Like, the war should have never been started in the first place. I think we all agree with that. But at the moment that he started it, he's had two shitty options. It was either take a bad deal because he's too weak to do anything further, or put American ground troops on the ground and seize the Strait of Hormuz and Clark Island. And I don't want that, because I have family in the military. I don't want any of them to die in this. I'm already pissed that 13 Americans are dead over this. And nobody in the Republican Party side seems to care about that, which is infuriating to me. But he's put himself in a no-win scenario, and he keeps doing that over and over again. Like, when the Thomas Massey primary stuff was coming out and I was doing all these TV shows, like, heading up to it, they kept asking me, like, Mike, what does victory look like for Donald Trump on Tuesday? Is it defeating Thomas Massey? And I was like, he can't win. There's no way to win, because either Massey won and it becomes embarrassing to Donald Trump and his control over the party, or he loses and people start asking why, and it becomes a conversation about Epstein and Israel, which is exactly what happened. So the victory was a loss. It's the same thing here. He's put himself in such a disadvantageous position. There's nothing that he can do. And I want to add one more thing here too, because it really, really angers me. Like, we're a little less than a week removed from the stupid UFC fight. Okay. And I debated a guy just the other day on Newsmax, and I was talking about why I don't personally like the UFC fight, even though it was well-produced. I'll give them that. It was well-produced. They seem to, like, want us to acknowledge that, like, the production quality was high, and I'm like, fine. I don't give a
shit. Unfortunately, a lot of my friends from high school who I still follow on Instagram and aren't really political thought it was cool, so I was like,
I mean, look, they're trying to win young men back, but they might want to, I don't know, help them buy a house or
fix the economy
first.
That's
the real answer.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's infuriating to me, because they draped themselves in the flag in order to do it, right? They had the cool flyover, they have all the American flags and shit. And the Republican Party's view of patriotism is so shallow. They think getting the American flag tattooed on your ass is loving America and being patriotic, when it's not. And if you don't choose to act that way, then you're not really patriotic. You don't love this country. Like, actual patriotism in this moment would be being very pissed at Donald Trump for getting 13 American soldiers killed. Like, those people gave up their lives to protect this country, to keep you and I safe, to do something braver than you and I did. Okay, I didn't sign up to go serve in the Iraq war. You're not signing up right now to go serve in Iran. You're doing a different type of service out here, you know, speaking out against what they're doing. And by the way, they attack you for it because they don't want to hear from guys your age talking about why the war is dumb. They just want you to shut up and sign up to serve, which is the same thing they wanted from me 20 years ago in Iraq. It's just, it's mind-boggling to me, but it's fake patriotism. You should be mad that these families will never be made whole again. There are 13 groups of parents and families and communities that are broken because of this, and we've gained nothing, and now we're surrendering to Iran. It's so bad, Adam, The French government is trying to block this deal at the United Nations. The French government, famously a government that loves to surrender, and I'm being reductive in that joke, so everybody don't get mad at me if you're like French in the comments and you're going to like point out like how great France was in World War II, which is fine. There's an argument to be made there. But like, it's insane. It's absurd to me. And none of these people are actually patriotic. They're disgusting human beings. And one more thought, sorry, too, which is because I just feel the need to bring it up all the time because it was a story that was like a 5-minute flash in the pan thing. But we should all be really mad about it. Donald Trump used the image of a dead soldier's casket in a fundraising email.
Yeah.
That's how little respect he has for our military. That's how little respect he has for our lives. He doesn't care about anyone other than himself. And the only reason he's doing this is because his poll numbers are in the shitter and he's praying that he can get gas prices down, which he's not going to be able to do. Like the midterms are fucked for them. They're just fucked. So screw them all. That's where I'm
at. And I want to end this off. We can go back and forth on this a little bit because this was a huge story that is still developing today. Donald Trump went to the G7 in France for 3 days, and each day he embarrassed us in a more brutal way than the last day. On one day, he literally walked the wrong direction and had to be guided back by Macron and Giorgia Meloni.
The kind of shit they made fun of Biden about. Every day. And they would just make shit up
worse. And then there's the one where he can't get his chair up in front of Sam Altman and he's struggling to do that. And you see in the background, Giorgia Meloni is sitting there going like this, like looking over, and she like kind of covering her mouth a bit, right? So she's present in all of these clips when Trump is acting like a bumbling idiot. Then he decides to give this idiotic interview with Italian media. It's not the Italian media's fault, but they ask him, hey, how is your meeting with our prime minister? And then he starts ranting about how she was begging for a photo. I didn't even have to give her one. I don't have to do anything. She was begging me for a photo. And then everyone's like, wait a minute. This doesn't seem like it's corroborated by anything. It doesn't seem like there's any evidence people were begging you for a photo. In fact, there's evidence of the opposite. She was kind of just talking to him in a firm manner. So then
he doubled down on X this morning.
But this was after the foreign minister of Italy canceled his trip to the United States. He was supposed to come on the 21st. And then Giorgia Meloni herself, the prime minister of Italy, came out with a video saying that Donald Trump far too often, you know, it's slightly different wording, but she was like, Donald Trump far too often is accommodating towards these adversarial countries like Russia, stuff like that. And then he's very combative. He's kind of an asshole to the allies that are supposed to be by his side. So she says that, and she's like, and one final thing, Italy never begs. It was a pretty badass video. And overall, Trump, I think this is the first time a prime minister or a European leader overall has come out and just said how they feel about Donald Trump. I would almost guarantee every single one of those leaders at the G7, almost every single NATO ally would come out and say the same thing. Trump is an asshole. He's not treating us well. It's one thing to say that, hey, NATO countries should pay their fair share a little bit more in order to fight Russia. If that's all he said, we wouldn't be having this very conversation. But what he's done is threatened 25% tariffs on all of the EU if they don't give him Greenland. He's threatened the Norway prime minister for not giving him the Nobel Peace Prize, even though there's no control of that. He said that Europe has never been there for us, that NATO has never been there for us, and that all of these allies are freeloaders who we shouldn't even be talking to anyways. That's way different than just trying to shore up resources to fight Russia. So we've got an embarrassing president who is narcissistic. He's petty, childish. He's an infant, and he's embarrassing us on the global stage. I feel like this wording isn't even strong enough. It's not that he's embarrassing us. It's that what he's doing is ruining the very fabric of what America is supposed to represent on the global stage. He's ruining the foundations that we've spent 70, 80 years building in a post-World War II era. And he's uprooting that all for his childish, grandiose, narcissistic ambitions. One final thing is, the next president that gets in, even if it is the most liberal Democrat who loves NATO, NATO countries just aren't going to respect us or trust us long term anymore. Nope. Because they don't know if in 2032 it's going to be some sort of J.D. Vance figure. They don't know if in 2036 we're going to have some figure that hates NATO again. Like they are going to be wary of the United States, and we are rapidly losing our leadership position. My friend taught me of this concept. There's status quo countries and revisionist countries. Revisionist countries want to do anything to change the global order, like Russia, China, Iran, these countries. Status quo countries benefit from the current global order. Donald Trump mistake us for a status quo or a revisionist country that needs to shake everything up. But what we are is a status quo country. We were okay with our position on the global stage, and all he's done is shake the tree, and we've fallen down, and we are now going to be nowhere near the leader of the free world.
Yeah. Well, and I'm just, I'll put a finer point on that. Like, Trump is an idiot. I just want to be super clear about that. Like, he is just an idiot and he has no clue and no real foreign policy strategy, no plan or strategy for really anything on how to improve this country. It's all a grift. Okay. Like, it's been a grift since day one. Like, his original plan was to create a massive Fox News like media company by running for president and then spinning it out of that and being able to take over the right wing cable news ecosystem. And, you know, and he's done that, but done it in a very different way. Right. And so he never had a real governing philosophy that was, you know, valuable to the American people or himself. And he had an opportunity more than a few times to try to do something of consequence on the world stage and in the country, just simply hasn't done it. Right. And so who's the winner of the last year and a half? It's China. China is the leader of the world right now. They are the most stable, steady foreign government on the planet right now. Countries are turning to them to make deals. I mean, we pushed Canada into the welcoming arms of the Chinese government, okay? Our closest ally right to our north. They're making massive trade deals with China. That's only going to get worse. Mexico's doing the same thing. And that's an unforced error, okay? Like, when they launched the tariff wars, and look, there's an argument to be made that in certain ways we are being fucked in trade by China. Okay. That's a legitimate argument.
Oh yeah. With China. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But like, you want to win a trade war? You need allies to win a trade war. Who are the first two countries that he put tariffs on? It was Canada and Mexico. So it's ridiculous. And, you know, I mentioned USAID earlier today, earlier in the show, and like, they cut all that funding and there are a lot of people who are going to die because that funding was cut. China stepped in to refill a lot of it. And if you look at it, China's influence in Africa in particular, where there is a ton of development, like, Africa is over the course of many decades going to be ascendant on the global stage in a way that I think people haven't quite tracked yet, both because they have a tremendous amount of resources, but also the growth in its population is going to be massive. And they're not going to trust us. They're going to trust China. Do you think that's good for the United States? The answer is simply no. And, you know, it's maddening. Like let's even assume for a second that this war with Iran was just in the right thing to do, okay? You want to win a war like that? You need allies. We didn't have any allies. We did this unilaterally. And then we got to the moment where the Strait of Hormuz was closed and Trump was desperate to fix it. He tried to pawn it off to the EU. He said, EU countries are going to come in. They're going to take it over. And they were like, no, we're not. This is your mess. We're not coming in to save you, pal. They've let him hang. And you go build those relationships. Barack Obama built relationships with world leaders, particularly Angela Merkel, who was at the Obama Presidential Library opening alongside Adam Mockler this week. And like, it's maddening. Like, Donald Trump doesn't have any friends on the world stage. His only actual friend was Viktor Orban, who was a dangerous autocrat and is gone. Okay. And then Erdogan in Turkey. That's it. Otherwise, everybody else hates him or knows that he's an idiot. Like, he can't even pretend to have the actual friendly relationship he wants with Putin right now. And Putin's not going to fucking help him because he's not doing what he wants in Ukraine right now. So he has zero allies, zero philosophy, nothing. He's making it up as he goes along on everything. And that's, you know, look, I'll end it on here and then hand it back to you to close. It's just like, I don't really care about the reflecting pool stuff. Okay. I don't like it. I mean, it's bullshit and gross because the reflecting pool is gorgeous and I love that part of DC, but like, it's just the perfect metaphor for everything. Okay. He invented a problem that wasn't a thing. He got obsessed about it. And maybe there was something that could have been done that was right to fix that, like install new technology to make sure that the reflecting pool turns blue. And instead of actually taking the time and listening to experts and coming up with a real strategy for it, he did a no-bid contract to one of his friends who, guys, you should Google the way that the guy who won the contract for the reflecting pool looks like. For wrestling fans, he looks like a fatter, dumber version of Paul Bearer from the 90s, okay? Big, thick, black mustache, absolutely pale. And then with what I can only describe as, like, in every photo I've seen, a very attractive young woman that I believe he must be paying for money. I just simply cannot believe that that's like his wife. I just don't believe that's who that is. It's crazy. This guy did it for $15 million in a no-bid contract, did the worst job you've ever seen. The damn thing's falling apart. There's an historic amount of algae in here because it's hotter than hell in the swamp in DC. They thought through none of that, okay? Does it actually matter to the average American? No, it does not. But that is every single crisis that we've experienced in this last year and a half has been exactly that. Invented a problem, okay? Maybe there was a nugget of something there we're taking on. Didn't take any of the time, didn't bring in experts. You can look at Doge. Instead, like look, the government's bloated and filled with waste, fraud, and abuse. That's true. Instead of hiring like forensic accountants who could come in and expose that and cut the fat, he hired a trillionaire, an idiot trillionaire who's just trying to protect his government contracts. So on and on and on. It's just the dumbest possible thing that you can always do. And he never thinks about how to improve your life. It's always about him. Him. Nothing about you. I'm out. Nellis out.
Yeah. No, mic drop moment. That was great. I always say Donald Trump for his entire life has never had to worry about his own health care or affording his own groceries or his own doctor.
A golden spoon up his ass, Adam, and he acts like he hit a triple.
Yeah, so then why would anyone ever expect him to worry about our health care or our grocery prices? He has no frame of reference for what it's like to worry about these things. Has Trump ever once in his life had to worry about actually meeting rent? Like, I don't mean like paying some luxurious $30,000 rent at some penthouse he owns, but I mean actually like meeting the rent every month.
No, he's your landlord. Like, he's the guy banging on your door demanding the rent.
So that's the perfect framework, and that's why he said on the White House front lawn when he was leaving that time, he was like, I don't think about Americans' pocketbooks. I don't think about their economic situation. Then they try to twist that into some master negotiating. But no, it's very clear that he's apathetic. And I think that's a really good place to leave it. You know, every single day, Mike Nellis and I work on building our independent media teams and channels and continuing to push truth at a time when the right wing commentators, pundits, politicians are flooding the zone with so much BS. So just a genuine thank you to every single person who is in the comments, in the YouTube section, all of this supporting us and helping us. You can either become a paid subscriber on Substack, or you can become a member to my channel, to Mike Nellis's YouTube channel. Join the community in any way you can. And if you know, you can't become a member, then just follow us. Just follow us for free. It's going to be absolutely amazing what we are building. More shows, more formats, more live streams, all for you. So thank you, Mike Nellis, for being such a great podcast partner. And we'll see you all on Wednesday.
Of course. Love you, buddy. See you guys on Wednesday.
Peace out.
Enjoy your weekend.